Guys, you're here with Dr. Molly,
And Todd Rowland.
and we're bringing you the podcast, The Business Side of the Pet Industries. Today, we're here with Jamie Bucherri, who is a very talented multi-business owning salon and groomer, and she's also dabbles in some other industries. So we're excited to have Jamie, and we will let her tell you a little bit about herself. So welcome, Jamie, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Oh, of course. So you have a very interesting and diverse portfolio of things that you do, and we love that. So you've been in the grooming industry. You got started in the veterinary space before that. You're also in the car industry, and you do so much of so many other things, as well as being a working mom. So can you just kind of give us a little bit of your history, a little bit of how you got started, and what kind of caused you to want to keep growing and expanding everything that you do?
Sure, I'd love to. So it started when I was getting out of high school. I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I was trying different things. I was taking little classes here and there, little webinars, just kind of trying to figure out who I was. I knew that I loved animals. I knew that I wanted to work with animals. So I initially started with a vet tech school. But unfortunately, it didn't start until the fall. So I was trying to find something similar, but maybe easier to get into, a little bit shorter of a school time. So I found a grooming school, a little grooming school in Anaheim. I ended up attending that until I was able to attend vet tech school. It was very expensive. I was paying for vet tech school and grooming school on my own. So I needed something to kind of start making income for me. So I ended up just kind of doing bath dogs at first, in my mom's garage at the time. And then as soon as I was able to perform a haircut, I would let people know, hey, like I'm still in school. But as soon as I was able to, people just really trusted me. I had the garage set up kind of like a really like a spa type environment. So people just really were like invested in me and believed in me as like a groomer and a business owner. And I was doing 20 dogs a day in a garage, 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. So it came to the point where I wasn't really like, I'm gonna hire employees, but I would call my friends and be like, can you come help me wash this dog today? I have so many. And that just kind of turned into, okay, well, you guys are here every day now. I need to legitimize. I need to get my EIN number. I need to figure out how I'm going to incorporate and all of that. And that just kind of hit me once it kind of blew up in the garage.
That's
So,
awesome. And when do you think you hit that point? How long have you been in the garage working?
less than a year.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Less than a year.
So how did we go from garage to multi-salon owner, with this whole team of employees and that kind of stuff?
Well, to be honest, one of the neighbors called the city. They issued me a business license for some reason, but once they did the investigation, they decided I wasn't allowed there. And so that kind of gave me 90 days of a boot. And I just, I found a place pretty close by. And from day one, we were doing 30, 40 dogs when I moved locations because everyone was really excited at the time. There wasn't too many groomers in my city.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, that's something that is very important. We tell people you have to check your zoning commission for where you're at.
We see, and NHOAs, we see so many people that spend, $3,000 on a wrap on their mobile grooming van when they first get it, and then they bring it home and they get a letter in HOA. Oh, you can't park that here. Like they're not doing the
Exactly.
research.
Yeah, and with me, I didn't ask or I didn't look up the zoning, but I did apply for a business license with the city, and they allowed me to have it. There's just someone stamping and not paying attention, I guess. So, even if you're issued certain things, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're allowed to be there. So.
So, what was your, I guess, progression from the one location to the different location? And then when did you get into the car industry? Again, we always have people that are asking, how can I get a second side hustle? Or I'm very passionate about the grooming pet space, but I also want to get into something else because I don't want to get burnt out. So, I guess, how did you kind of get into that space? How do you juggle between the pet industry and the other industry? And do you feel more of a pull one way or the other? Let's just kind of go through that a little, if you don't mind.
Definitely. That question is a lot of information, so I'm going to try to squeeze it as best
Yeah.
as I can. So my real turning point was back in 2015. From 2011 to 2015, I had like an older mindset as far as like it, you work yourself to the bone until you cannot work anymore. You work 7 days a week, and that's how you make it in this world. And that's what I did. I worked 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. my, you know, entire 20s. But in 2015, my son was murdered. He was 5 months old. And, you know, from that moment on, I decided that time was my most important thing in life. And working 7 days a week was not the answer. And by the time I had next kids, I was going to make sure that I had the proper time with them. So, I mean, that was really my driving force. I continued working 7 days a week for a while, but that was my ultimate goal, was to kind of set myself up where I can step back. And I worked really hard. And then from then on, I feel like it was kind of just opportunities that presented itself to me. And then I'm a jumper. I'll take those. I'm not scared at all. I'm grooming in Corona, and this groomer that works for me says, "Hey, Jamie, will you go check the salon out for me? I really want to buy it. I'll shoot you a little bit of money. I just want you to go through it and write everything down for me. Let me know, you know, what's wrong with it, how much money I'm gonna need to put into it." So I went there for this groomer that's my friend, and I fell in love with the place. And she immediately, before I even was able to be like, "This is great," she's like, "I'm out." So I said, do you mind if I take it? Like, I love this place. It's in Temecula. It's in a beautiful part of town. So I took it, and I ended up being able to talk the owner into just like no money down and carrying the loan, because grooming businesses are different. Usually it's, you know, a certain half times percentage of your yearly income is what your business is worth. You are not selling your grooming salon for that, at least in California. Because investors that have $100,000, $200,000, they're not buying grooming salons. They're buying construction companies. They're buying restaurants. So your grooming business is only worth what someone is willing to pay for it. So, and I really learned that, at, you know, buying salon after salon. So that's how it ended up working out with Temecula. And then Lake Elsinore was the same thing. Someone told me about it. I went down there. I fell in love with it. I ended up doing an owner carry with the loan. And then again, it happened again in with Fallbrook in the last couple months. So now I have four salons.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, going into different things, I guess I've gotten burnt out mentally a little bit with just the grooming industry and the way that groomers work with, like, I'm work for 60%, 75% or nothing. You know, the whole us moving into licensing possibly in California. I just thought, you know what? What if one day this doesn't work? I need a backup plan. Right. So, you know, I tried different things. I got into the cars because I, you know, was building mobiles for the different locations. Okay. And then when we would upgrade, I would sell that mobile and then build a new one. So it wasn't a mobile business, but I was building multiple units and then we would sell them to upgrade. So I think we, in that total of 10 years, I probably sold about 30, converted and sold about 30 buses and trailers total.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then that brought me into just cars because, you know, I ended up getting my license so that I could get the buses and trailers wholesale. And then I would find cars that I would fall in love with. And, yeah. So anything on the side really was just like, I don't know, everything just kind of happened and I take it the opportunity or I don't.
Yeah. Something extra to focus on to like, okay, this is a little much over in the grooming space. Let me go focus on this for a minute and calm down, clear things.
I just know how to do this. And I have this down so well that like when another salon comes on and I'm like, no more salons. I know how to
Can't
do it
yourself. Yeah.
That's us. What we, every year we say, like at the end of the year, we'll be like, next year, we're not expanding. We're not growing. We're literally going to take a break. And then we took actually last year, we took a 2 month snowbird vacation and went to Florida for 2 months. And honestly, we hated it. we thought we needed it, like we had just been grow for so many years, and then it was just like, and we knew we were purchasing another place this year, and so we're just like, we just need this break, and we are just not people who can. We need like 3 days off, maybe once a month, and we're good. But other than that, we don't do well. Just
Yeah, we're long weekend people. So it was like, yes, we were out of state, but we were on our computers every day. We were still looking at, things and trying to, work on policies and checking in with everybody. And it was like, I think being gone so long, you feel like you can't check out. So we pretty much set our team up to self-manage. So we don't have to, micromanage them every day and things like that. But it's still, there's always something. And when they know you're available, they could figure it out themselves or they could ask someone else, but they'll ask you. Whereas they know, like when we're away for a conference or we're gone for a few days, they will actually, unless it's an emergency, we don't have that constant little chatter back and forth.
That's
So
good. That's
it
good.
was,
That was definitely a key turning point for us business owners when we go from being so involved in everything to being able to just kind of more oversee while others are kind of taking care of the responsibilities.
Yeah, we at the probably about the 6 week part of the day, we started looking at salons for sale in the area that we were in. It's just like we got to get into something. We can't be here any longer without having.
Yeah. And we were like, okay, yeah, what mobile deals are out there? Because, we do mobiles in salons, and then now we're in the boarding and daycare space. And it was just like, okay, what's down here? What's going on? Like, we love Florida. I love Florida. Like, and at the time, we were, we kept saying, oh, when we can be snowbirds, when we can be snowbirds, which we're in Tennessee. It does not get extremely cold, but I hate cold. If it was up to me, I'd live in Florida like October through May. So it was like, this is a little trial run, see how everything goes, and it went great as far as we didn't have to come home one time and things like that. But for us, it was just like, it was too much. So it's like, we either have to like get stuff down here or we got to go home. And so it was like the last week, I think we're like, okay, this is vacation. And, but yeah, I don't think we'll be doing that again. But yeah, we're the same way as far as growing. And it's just like, I kind of want to circle back to the selling your business and the retirement and things like that is, groomers don't really realize so many times that their business isn't sellable how they think it is, even if they scale it up. One thing that we try to push on people is to recognize that if you are grooming in your business, you can't count that income. So, like, most people just think, oh, for an example, my business brings in $100,000 a year, but if you're bringing in half of that, you can't count that because they're going to have to bring someone in or do it themselves. So nobody's paying for that part of your income. Like, that is not an asset. And things like that that people just unfortunately don't think about. And then they get to that point of selling or wanting to retire, and they're left with so much less than they think they would get, and it's just a sad situation.
Or they don't save for retirement because they say, oh, I'll sell my business. And they may get a little bit of money, but it's definitely not what they should have been saving all over the years.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, and then, you're diversified in different industries and things like that, which is great. That's another thing we talk about. It doesn't matter what your retirement plan is, but have one. Us, like, we do real estate, and then now we do our 401k, but we've also diversified in the pet space. So we're not just grooming anymore. We were mobile grooming, then salon. Now we're boarding and daycare, we're adding training. So it's like, all of those different sectors of the pet industry kind of overlap, but they also still have their own seasons, their own clientele, things like that. And it's like, where you're busy in one, you may can pick up that space in another. And kind of like you, I love that you're in different locations in different areas, because that in itself, what we've seen, like, we have different pricing markets, different supply and demand, and where we may be slow in one area. Like, our mobiles, they don't have a slow season. Like, we stay fully booked year round because people want that convenience, and they'll get their dog groom year round to keep it. So it's just, the more you can diversify and plan, and that, it's just, unfortunately, so many people don't think about retirement until they either have to quit grooming because they get injured, they get burnt out, or it's just that retirement time, and then there's, it's too late at that point.
And you brought up something I wanted to kind of circle back to. And I know California has different labor laws than most of the country, but you brought up, the whole groomers wanting, this 50, 60, 70%. We have not had problems retaining groomers, and we don't pay anywhere near that. And we were at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and it was mainly for business owners, the class we were teaching, but one of the owners had brought her manager in, and you know, the manager said, I would never work for less than 50%. I said, okay, let's just say that you're making $50,000 a year at your current employer at 50%. So would you come to work for us for $60,000 a year and not care about what percentage? And she's like, well, yeah. I was like, okay, let's get off of that. But it's just so many people are stuck in that mindset. I know you, I don't even know if you can pay commission where you're at, but how have you battled that mindset with expanding and having so many employees?
So I definitely have to break down the math every single interview that I do. Because, you know, especially if you're asking for commission, don't you care what the salon's prices are? What if they're, if their haircuts are $35 and my, then that means me paying 33% is more than them paying 50, but people don't want to do the math. So a huge thing is like the education process during the interviews when I'm speaking to people. The second thing is, I pay hourly, cause I'm not going to, some salons are still able to pay commission, even though it's illegal because they jump through all the loopholes. They make all of their people get insurance. It's still illegal, but they make it legal on paper. So, I pay basically 35% or so, equated into hourly. So it's depending on kind of their dog volume. Yeah. And then the biggest thing that I try to do is I try to push benefits. So I pay 85% Kaiser insurance. We do like a paid book club, gym membership. We go on two vacations, one of them Super Zoo, twice a year. I try to offer the side benefits, but to be very honest, if a salon gets a hold of one of those people and says 50% and says nothing else, those people are gone from my salon.
Yeah.
We've noticed too, we don't even advertise when hiring what our percentage is. We usually just ask them what they need to make a week, and we say that won't be a problem. And then we'll get into it and tell them what they make. And once they hear what they can make, they're not so worried about the percentage. But ever since COVID in 2020, more people are worried about, they want to know how much time off they're getting a year. We're getting those type of the benefit questions more than what percentage or how much am I going to make. I mean, everybody has to make a livable wage. I mean, that's not up for discussion, but they seem to be more interested in that work-life balance and things like that. And so we've not really had a problem not paying anywhere near the 50% of keeping and retaining employees, but we still, it's, I mean, every Facebook group you're in or whatever you see, I mean, there'll be 300 comments on what they should be paid and all that stuff. And it's, so it's just like, I'm glad some more and more people are not still doing that.
Well, and finally, I think more and more groomers are so, for so long, pricing was not talked about, discussed. It wasn't raised. You know, I know groomers that they've been open 10, 20 years and they've maybe done one price increase. And it's like, my shampoo goes up every time I order, you know? And it's like, we tracked it during COVID. I think our shampoos, most of our supplies went up like 30%. They took away free shipping. And it's like, if you don't adjust your prices for that, you're going to be, you know, that's going to hurt your bottom line. And I think now, you know, more and more groomers are just starting to understand and look at their numbers more and make sense of it. But yeah, like Todd said, our first question in interview, we're not first question, but when we're talking about pay is, you know, what are your pay expectations? What do you need to make per week? Or what do you want to bring home per pay period? And we have all of our averages for each location of what our groomers make, on their average check and their average tips. And so, yeah, and we've never had someone, we're one of the higher priced ones in our market. So, you know, that is obviously a factor in what you can offer percentage wise. If you're a cheaper place, your groomers are going to want a higher commission. But if you're in a higher price point, you can offer a lower commission, and our groomers make more than they do almost working anywhere else in our area, because we have, one, the brand recognition. We've been open 10 years, so people know us, they call us. We don't really have slow seasons. And then, you know, we have the highest price, some of the highest prices. So they're making great paychecks. And once we tell them what they'll make, and they're like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, I could do that. And then we say, and you get this at this level commission. But at that point, they don't even listen to what percentage it is because they've already heard how much money they're going to make. You know, we had a groomer leave us one time because her friend was opening a salon and was going to pay her 50% or 55%. And this was a new salon in the middle of nowhere. She had a 30, 45 minute commute each way every day. And so we said, okay, goodbye. And then within like 2 weeks, she asked for her job back because she wasn't making money. And we just said, no, I'm sorry. Like you chose, that's just that had she come to us and told us that before she put her notice in and left, we could have explained the numbers. But that was one of the things where we really learned, kind of like you said, show the numbers, break it down. Everyone just hears that commission percentage and then they don't think about the math. But when you show them the math, it completely changes the conversation.
Yeah.
So with all your, how is your management team? Are you spearheading it all, or do you have support help with that?
So once I took on the fourth, that's when my life completely changed. I knew that I needed to delegate everything completely differently. So I was doing all of the back end stuff, like all of the marketing, all of the billing, for the two and then three salons. And then I would go into the salons once a week and either help them groom or just manage and oversee and check everything. But when I opened the fourth, I said, I can't. Everything I do is 2 or 3 weeks behind. Like I need help so that we don't just have four salons, we have four flourishing salons.
Right.
So I hired someone who was a manager at one of the salons, to basically, she's home now with her kids, works virtually, and does all of the back end stuff for me, which is it's great for both of us. And then another manager of the salon, I adore her. She's a master groomer, so she, can train. She's
Right.
owned a business before. She's everything. She's the one who does the physical visits of the salon. So she goes there, does all the meetings, does all the training, makes sure everyone's keeping up on the cleaning and all of that. And then now I'm officially just overseeing everything.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's great when you have can find that good support team to help out.
Yeah, it took 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. We understand. We're going through that. Like so we've always taught our people to self-manage and at some point, it comes to us. But we're at that point now that we actually have to look into like a real management structure too to help oversee the things, because we can't be, everywhere at one time. And when you get to that level where you have that much going on, there's always something going on. There's always someone calling out, always something breaking, always a customer issue, or someone got double booked, or, it's always something when you're there and you can't fix everything. So it's Or, and if you did, you would have no life outside of work at all. So, I know, I do want to say I'm sorry to hear about your loss, but it seems like you did turn that loss into a positive thing for you and, everyone else in your life as far as making you have that work-life balance. That's another thing, like you said, as especially as groomers and business owners, we just feel like work-life balance doesn't apply to us, and it's just we've learned for us too, because we kind of work-life balance is an important thing, but it looks different to everybody. So again, where we thought that, 40 hours was the ideal, or, taking that vacation, that long vacation was ideal. We've learned that just doesn't work for us. Like we are, 800 hour a week people, but then we need that time, that one day to just decompress or whatever it is. So many people just don't get what they need, or they do what they think everyone else is saying they need balance on, or everyone else, this is what it looks like to me. So you only need to work, 4 days a week, or you need to take a week vacation every month, or it's just, work-life balance, you have to have it and you have to have that time to decompress, but you also have to figure out what that looks like for you as an individual. I
Right.
think a lot of people don't do that. They just want to do the norm, and that's great for most people, but it's not great for everybody, especially business owners. For a lot of business owners, it's hardest to turn off. You're always thinking about what's next and things like that. We went to where we had tried to plan like one night a week where we were like, okay, like at 6 o'clock, we're going to go out to dinner. We're not going to bring the phones. We're just going to shut off. We're unreachable. First night we tried that, one of our employees calls us about, I don't think we got our food yet, and
Had a wreck in the van.
Had gotten in a wreck. So it was like, okay, so it's just, let's cut that out. So it's just, I don't know. It's taken us a while to figure out what that is. And for us too, we've realized, we go through seasons. So it's just like right now we just took over a got a new boarding facility, and it's 60 rooms. Some days we have 80 something dogs here. I mean, it's nonstop right now, you know, new policies, new procedures, hiring. And it's just right now, I don't even know what a down minute is. But it's exciting. It's refreshing. Like, we're not just exhausted and burnt out. It's just like, okay, what can we get done today? What can we get done tomorrow? But we know this is like one of those seasons that we're going to be really busy, and then we're going to take a breather.
And we decided too, is to help our life, is we just started making a list of things that we didn't want to do or didn't make us happy doing, and outsourced them, whether that meant to other employees or literally outsourced to somebody in a different business to take care of us for ourselves. Because it was like you were talking about, you were running like 3 weeks behind on back end stuff. Like, we outsourced to our accountant, you know, our bookkeeping. It was just one of those things that it used to be, you know, every Tuesday was payroll and do all the QuickBook transactions. And then next thing you know, payroll's not getting done to Wednesday, and you haven't done a QuickBook transaction log in 3 months. And it's just like, you know, you go to bed thinking about it. And it was like, well, that's something I used to enjoy doing, but I mean, for no more than what it costs for them to do it. And they send us over the reports once a month. We go through them. We actually take the time to go through our numbers and all that kind of stuff, and it's done for us. So that's just like one thing, just to completely get off of our plate and not going to bed thinking about, oh gosh, I haven't done that in 3 months now. And so just make a list to get some of that work-life balance. And then we made a list of what makes us happy in the business and really focus on those things. And that's been very helpful.
Yeah. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are you good at? What is somebody else better at? You know, social media, I hate doing social media. I'm terrible at it. And to me, it's like last priority. I can do some cute posts and my wording is great, but again, it's just like it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I'll get to it later. I'll get to it later. And then, you know, you go a week and you realize you didn't post anything. So, you know, that's something that we're looking to outsource. We've done it before and then that didn't work out. So we're doing it again. But I don't know. I think you bring up some great points just about, you know, finding the right people and finding, you know, people that you can delegate to. Delegation is hard. People think, you know, it's easy to just tell other people what to do. That's not what delegating is. It's letting go of that control. And that is hard. You know, and I'll say I did this even with Todd. You know, nobody can do it better than me. You know, it's my business. It's my baby. I started it. It's my way. And, you know, it's just, you have to accept that once you're delegating something out, everything will not be done how you do it. And that was really hard for me to accept. But, you know, you can't do everything. So, and the things are, it gets done great. And chances are, half the time, there's a better way to do it that you don't even think about until you delegate it to somebody. So, but I guess what is just one little piece of advice that you can give someone who either, since you've kind of done it all, that is either wanting to get into the pet space or that's thinking about becoming a business owner or expanding? Like, what is just one little piece of information that you want to leave with everyone listening about anything, really?
I guess I would say some personal advice would be, take care of yourself. We as business owners don't look at ourselves as athletes, but we absolutely are. Everything that we're doing with our body, everything that we're consuming is extremely important, because if we're not okay, then nothing else is okay. So we have to come first, and we should basically treat ourselves as, you know, an athlete. And then I guess, as far as opening a business or expanding, I guess I would just say that we all overthink ourselves out of so many things. A lot of us do. And you know, as long as the logical facts are there, I would say to take that jump and take that leap and do what you've always wanted to do. Because you know, some of us are just not meant to work a 9 to 5 for somebody else. We have talents that can, you know, grow to extraordinary lengths, and none of us, you know, some of us don't even take the chance to do that sometimes. So.
Oh, yeah.
I do have one last question. A lot of people, I just want to know what your experience has been with the more you've grown, the more successful you've been as far as your relationships with family and friends. Have you felt the strain of that? It seems like the people you're friends with in the beginning are sometimes not there when you get to a certain level, because they're not, they're not cheerleaders. They're almost, I don't want to use the word jealous, but it's like they, or they can't comprehend what you have going on. Like they're, you don't, it's hard to have a conversation with them about anything because you're just not.
It's like the things that you stress about, you're like us, we're responsible for 35 people's payroll and if they're getting paid at the end of the week and if something goes wrong, not whether, my barber canceled my appointment or something. It's just like it's almost like you become unrelatable to people at some point, and it's or they just don't understand the what you have going on and that you're not available to be at every girl's day or every vacation that they plan or things like that. So, I mean, have you found that that's something that you've struggled with or and how have you kind of dealt with that?
Yeah, I've definitely become just very private in my life. I deleted my personal Instagram. I don't have a lot of I don't really have a lot of the friends that I had in the beginning, let alone, even a couple years ago. I mean, most of that's my fault because if I have a friend somewhere down the line, they end up helping me out somewhere, and then, that always that always out. But yeah, I mean, I've even like I had to fire my boyfriend one time and then go home and make him dinner that night. So it's been very interesting road mixing relationships and friends with, a lot of it's been great. I wouldn't say that it's a negative thing or don't do it. Because sometimes the people around you that care about you care about your business too, and for a certain period of time, that's that can be a good thing sometimes. But if you do go into that, just know, hey, there's a chance I'm never going to speak to this person again one day.
Yeah, we try to avoid hiring friends and family because just for that reason, we don't want to get put in that position. Not to say it hasn't happened before, but we definitely try to avoid it. And I don't know, I guess a piece of advice I can say for other business owners too, and this is something that I really like to see within the industry. I really do think that a good portion of the industry is trying to kind of break that cycle of being alone and try to be there for support. There's always the negative ones, and that's actually why we started our podcast, was just all that negativity on like the Facebook and things like that for some people. But the more that we actually get out and talk to people, I used to go to these conferences years ago and I would be too shy or too intimidated to go up and talk to some of these people that were the speakers and things like that. And now I've just I forced myself out of my comfort zone and to do it. And I've met some really amazing people that are actually, they may not be in our particular situation, but they get it. They're running businesses. They are crazy busy. They have employee problems. And it's like, you can't, there's a lot of stuff as business owners that even if you're talking to other business owners, unless they're in the space, they just don't fully grasp it or get it, or it's just nice to have someone to bounce ideas off of or share that information and things like that. So I don't know, I feel like it's moving a little more in that direction to where maybe we don't have to kind of feel so isolated. Because I know like we've met some great people, you included now, in that space. So hopefully business owners will start reaching out. And that's something that we tell people at the conferences we go to, like, please come up and talk to us. Like we are not unapproachable. Like we like to engage, we like to talk, that kind of stuff. Like, please ask us your questions because, when we got started, there was almost nothing, like that. When we would go to conferences, there was maybe one business class the whole weekend. Now you can get them, pretty much all day, every day. So, I think people just get intimidated, but
Definitely. The groomers in my town are all enemies. I've reached out to all of them. Some of them will not conversate with me at all. But I like to let other business owners know in the area, hey, I'm raising my prices. Here's my new price list. During COVID, it was nice to talk to certain business owners in the area, other grooming salon owners. So,
Networking can be a powerful tool, and there's more than enough dogs to go around, is what we say.
definitely.
But thank you so much for your time, and it was nice getting to interview you and talk to you and hear your perspective on things. And thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.